What is that, like a Franken Pacino kind of thing? Is that where you're going?
Yeah, that's Franken Pacino. He's looking for freedom and love.
Is that what Frankenstein looks for? I'll confess, no. I haven't really read Frankenstein or watched Frankenstein. I've seen like 5 minutes of Young Frankenstein. Is about my experience with that important cultural touchstone.
I don't think you're qualified to have a discussion about that then.
So he's mostly looking to perform Putting on the Ritz, right?
And welcome to I'm Trying to Think, episode 8. I'm Chuck Werner, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Dave Stern. Say hello, Dave.
Hey, folks.
I'm Trying to Think is a podcast sponsored by the Foundation Institute. Check foundation-institute.org. And you can find I'm Trying to Think on the web at imtryingtothink.com. That's all one phrase. And I think you can
you have multiple phrases on a website URL?
You know,
I don't think that makes sense as a concept.
I don't put it past anyone. But I'm Trying to Think is a podcast, and our theme is applying philosophical genius to cultural idiocy. That's our general theme.
Sort of.
Right.
We're a little distractible.
We're a little distractible?
That was the comedic trope that I like to call understatement. Okay. To be more specific, we're hugely fucking distractible.
I don't really know what you mean, but I also wanted to say that the opening music is What a Fool Believes by the Doobie Brothers, with a lead singer in that incarnation of the Doobie Brothers, because the Doobie Brothers had changed a guy every, like, week, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, that was their basic thing.
Yeah, that was Michael McDonald singing. You should know Michael McDonald from his solo work of singing, being in like, commercials. A crazy high-pitched...
It's weird because it's high-pitched, but it's also booming.
It's like, booming, high-pitched nonsense is what he sings.
Like, it's kind of...
But give him credit.
It's got this boom, but it's not, like... I can't...
Yeah, I don't know.
It's weird.
There's no way I can sing like Michael McDonald. But I have this theory that... Oh, and the writer of that song was Kenny Loggins with Michael McDonald. Now, Kenny Loggins wasn't in the Doobie Brothers, but he wrote that song.
No, he was in the Danger Zone.
He was in the Danger Zone writing that song for the Doobie Brothers with Michael McDonald. It's like... That's like a weird, like, pop, adult, contemporary rock incest that I don't feel completely comfortable with.
Wait, are they brothers?
Not literal incest, Dave. That was figurative incest, not the... Yeah, don't be so puerile. I think that's the word I mean. At any rate,
that word is one of the words that's pretty accurate at describing what that was.
I have this theory about Michael McDonald that he knows some ancient secrets of the universe, but is desperate to hide them from everyone, even though he puts them in his lyrics. So he's singing, you know... Ancient secrets of the universe, but hiding them behind the crazy, voice that he does.
Okay, so here's my question about this theory then, would be, is it like a thing where it's like the Nicolas Cage film National Treasure, where he's hiding them, but he wants people to find them, so that's why he's put them in things? Or is it something where he's trying legitimately to hide his secrets, but he has this weird compulsion that he has to kind of, them out?
I have to be honest with you. I haven't really thought it out that far.
Well, piece it together now. Give me, like, which of those two do you think is more likely?
I think he probably is trying maybe to sing the secret to a certain secret society of people, maybe handed down generation to generation.
Possibly blue.
Who learn to hear words despite them being sung in a fashion unintelligible.
Beluga whales.
Possibly. Possibly some sort whales? Of secret society of beluga whales. I'm not saying that's definite, all right? I'm not making
You're claims. Not committing.
I don't want the Michael McDonald Foundation to sue me. I'm just kind of, you know, I'm spitballing an idea. It's an idea I have. It's also possible that Kenny Loggins forces him to write these songs like this. And as a result, he tries to hide the meaning. But Kenny Loggins is there, like, with a whip or something, like, you're going to sing the song, Michael McDonald. And then he's, because he's in the danger zone.
Right.
Kenny Loggins is.
Also, he's got to cut loose with a whip.
He is footloose, yes. Mm-hmm. Any other Kenny Loggins hits you want to reference here?
No, but I can tell you this is not all right.
What?
What's the Caddyshack?
That's the Kenny Loggins. Yeah, that's the Kenny Loggins song.
I think we've covered the three.
Yeah, that's pretty much it for Kenny Loggins. But that's my theory on Michael McDonald. I don't know exactly how Kenny Loggins fits in. I was just
that was the Kenny Loggins part seemed a bit more on a limb. I'm pretty comfortable with the Secret Society of Beluga Whales thing.
Do you think Kenny Loggins is a violent man though?
I have no particular thoughts on that man's private life, except that he probably does a lot of coke because he was a celebrity in the 80s.
All right. Well, why I picked that song, What a Fool Believes, not that anyone would know because Michael McDonald is hiding the lyrics.
Right.
But the... Michael McDonald is singing, What a Fool Believes He Sees. No wise man has the power to reason away. So why I picked that... Yeah, thank you, Michael McDonald. Why I picked that as the opening song and why those lyrics mean something today is that today we are here to discuss the serious topic of free will versus determinism.
Yeah, very, very serious stuff. I'm excited.
Yeah, Dave, did you want to talk... You want to talk a little bit... as long as we're sidetracked, about the theme of the show and how we've gotten away from it, how you kind of want to get back to it.
Well, I was just saying, you know, we had this thought that, you know, we were going to, you know, we're going to talk about some, you know, like, of, you know, bits of culture, bits of, you know, popular culture, but we were also going to, you know, kind of, you know, we're trying to think, so we wanted to go, you know, a bit more high-minded, you know, explore, you know. Both of us are, in addition to just being giant, you know, nerds, are also hoity-toity philosophy nerds.
We are hoity-toity philosophy nerds.
The hoitiest and the toitiest.
You see, every time you use the word nerd, I would replace it with expert.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with nerd, but that's expert how, works too.
Yeah, but expert, I mean, that's how this all got started, guess, was yeah. The Foundation Institute, knowing we were experts on the subjects of... philosophy, history, psychology, you know, numenology, phrenology.
Wait, numenology is the one where it's like about Wayne Knight mostly, right?
Yeah. Newman. Phrenology, big one. I know we've both have an associate's personally, but
I have a pair of calipers.
Tautology. I had studied that for a while. I actually am a third rank tautologist. Yeah.
Man, I'm trying to come up with more good ologies. I'm blanking. I'm drawing
a blank. You're supposed to be an expert on ology, so if you're blanking, that's a problem. Or maybe we've just gone through all the ologies that exist.
Yeah, I don't think there's any more.
Pediology? Is that like the study of the foot?
I don't know what that is, but it doesn't sound legal.
It doesn't sound appetizing. I wouldn't eat it.
No, I'm not in favor of pediatrics.
All right, well, yeah, so we are here to discuss, though, these important topics that are meaningful to us as philosophy experts, but also have an important application in everyday life, in our culture, in popular culture, in unpopular culture, in...
culture that's looking a little awkward right now, but is going to bloom in a couple years. Yeah, come blooming back to the culture, reunion and, you know, make and then
everybody's
look.
Gonna be really upset that they were mean to them.
Yeah,
and we have to think about how to apply our knowledge of philosophy, phrenology, tautology to these everyday topics that we're trying to cover.
But then what we've done in, I'd say well over 50% of the time, is mostly just talk about song lyrics.
We do talk about song lyrics are a part of popular culture. Yeah. We have philosophical things to say about song lyrics, like the lyrics of What a Fool Believes, and how we will come to apply them to the topic of free will and determinism.
Yes.
Yes. So, I mean, when we talk about song lyrics, we're not just being idle chit-chatters, Dave. Or maybe you are.
Some of the time.
Some of the time you're being an idle chit-chatter. Mm-hmm. All right, well, none of the time am I being an idle chit-chatter. I am always serious and stern, and you are just always Dave Stern.
Yes.
What other... I mean, we have movies. We have to talk about movies, too. Those are... Not only are those things that are popular culture, they are things with lots of deep philosophical impact.
I mean, I'm not saying we shouldn't be talking about stuff, and we're going to keep talking about stuff. I'm just saying, and this is something we're trying to fix now, which I think is good, we have not perhaps mined those veins for all of the sort of philosophically interesting gold that they might contain.
Right. Well, for instance, I don't know, Michael McDonald.
What the...
Yeah, he just got in me for a moment there. For instance, a few weeks ago we talked about...
I do not know what to do with that sentence.
Hey, I'm sure you know a few things to do with it. I'm thankful that you're not doing them. a few weeks ago we talked about the movie Primer. We have no idea how it's pronounced. But that had actually some interesting questions about the deterministic universe.
Yeah, I mean, as a time travel movie is going to inevitably have to.
Like, and we haven't talked about Back to the Future, but what would you say Back to the Future has to say about free will and determinism? I think it's if you kiss your mom, then your sister disappears from photos, something like that.
Yeah, pretty much. And I think that's about it.
If you stand on the toilet long enough, you may learn the secrets of time travel.
Yeah. But I think there's a reason we haven't been talking about Back to the Future and its philosophical implications much.
Yeah, it's a little bit flimsy. I would agree. So, are you ready to get into the free will determinism discussion, or should we? I mean, this is going to be big, Dave. It's going to be huge. It's going to be deep. It's going to be broad. It's going to hurt some people. It's going to heal others. I don't know about that. I actually don't know if that's true.
Yeah, you can't vouch for that. Even though it's a thing you just said, but
yeah.
I don't know. It was words.
If you are healed by this podcast, please write us at...
contact@imtryingtothink.com.
Right. We are not Dave, do we get any email? I asked for email a lot in the last...
I haven't forwarded... I haven't set up a forwarder to you yet.
You have not. I have not. I've been out of the loop.
We did get one email.
Yes.
It was from a guy we know.
But even if it was from a guy we know, did they have an interesting question? Also, you've completely spoiled it. Don't you think everybody... I mean, do you think the mail that somebody like Bill O'Reilly or Rush Limbaugh gets is not from people he knows? Of course it is. He just has people in his office write the mail so he can say, yeah, I got this mail, blah, blah, blah. And he'll feel like he's telling the truth.
Hey, basically, I'll forward it to you. It was less of a probing question, though, and more of a sort of pleasant communique. More for a probing question.
But somebody liked the podcast, is what you're saying.
We have documented proof.
If you like the podcast, email us at...
contact@imtryingtothink. Man, you guys should have seen that man's face just lit up when he gave me that cue.
If you don't like the podcast, email us at...
contact@imtryingtothink.com. Seriously, it is like a kid on Christmas Day.
Somewhat neutral or ambivalent feelings about the podcast, email us at
contact@imtryingtothink.com. But honestly, keep that one short. It sounds like that doesn't sound fun.
No, it doesn't sound fun. But the thing is we believe you have enough free will to determine whether or not you like the podcast and write us about it. Would you agree with that, Dave? Is that a kind of free will that you think people possess?
Ooh, it depends.
Oh,
it depends.
Here we go. Let's get it started. Let's get it started in the Black Eyed Peas kind of way.
Wait, so does that mean we should actually get it retarded but then be censored on, like, NBA commercials?
Yeah.
Okay, so to get it retarded, We'll start with some definitions.
All right, definitions.
Free will.
Free will. What does it mean?
What are we talking about?
What does it even mean? And that's, I mean, I think that's actually the crux of why I'm going to argue, and I'm going to argue that free will and determinism are both absurd concepts that do nothing for us, that don't get us anywhere. They are what I would call them Jacob Marley's chain. They weigh us down. Mm-hmm. And they aren't doing us any favors.
So you think it's kind of their rabbit holes, their distractions.
Come up with as many.
Sort of, it's that later, to be pretentious, it's that later Wittgensteinian thing where, you know, after he, you know, basically made logical positivism happen, is the part where he said, you know, all philosophy is just these little language puzzles.
It's more of that kind of thing. Okay, I'm going to say I don't agree with what Lichtenstein was trying to say there. Not that anyone in the audience...
Lichtenstein's a country. Wittgenstein's a guy.
I don't agree with what Lichtenstein was trying to say either, those bastards. That's a spoonerism or something. I don't know what they call those.
That's when my brain said Lichtenstein instead of Wittgenstein.
But...
I think that time you still said Wittgenstein.
Yeah, isn't it a W? But it's German, yes, but so it's pronounced as a V.
But I'm saying you said Lichtenstein, then you meant to say Wittgenstein.
And I'm pretty sure you Wittgenstein.
Said Wittgenstein. You kind of split the difference. So anyhow, we're distracted.
What Frankenstein was trying to say there
is
it's fire bad. I don't agree with it. I don't agree that all of philosophy.
So all of philosophy is not, you know, just these sort of little sort of toy puzzle boxes of language.
Right.
And fire is good.
And fire is good. Fuck you, Frankenstein. Lichtenstein. I think if Wittgenstein were in Lichtenstein making a Frankenstein, we would have a good movie right there.
Hold on.
Okay.
I have to do this, but because it's just in my brain right now and I have to get it out or it'll bother me for like a couple minutes. But because I acknowledge it's horrible, I'm going to do it in sort of pedantic nerd voice.
Okay.
Excuse me, Frankenstein is the mad doctor who brings life into the world, and Frankenstein's monster is the monster. It is not actually Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Thank you!
I agree with that sentiment. If this is the 19th century and we're hanging out with Mary Shelley. But since then, culture has changed.
Isn't that right, Lord Byron?
What Frankenstein means, yes. But it is actually true. In the book, Frankenstein, the monster has no name. But he also talks. He's also actually really, really sort of well-educated.
Yeah, he's an intelligent, he is a chatty motherfucker.
Yeah, so, you know, what are you going to do? So anyways, I don't agree with that. All philosophy comes down to just logic-y, fun word puzzles. I'm actually going to make the case that there is something to gain from certain forms of philosophy as I make the case that free will and determinism are both absurd concepts. Mm-hmm. And somewhere in there, Michael McDonald will be mentioned. All right, well, let's get on that then. But first, why don't we take a break?
Oh, yeah. Look and choose a ready guide in some celestial voice. If you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. You can choose from phantom fears and kindness that can kill. I will choose a path that's clear. I will choose free will.
And welcome back to I'm Trying to Think. This is episode 8.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great number. 8 is great.
8 is a magic number.
I'm still your host, Chuck Warner. This is still my co-host, Dave Stern. We're talking about free will and determinism today, or we're about to.
No, we started getting into it a little bit.
And we're also talking about Michael McDonald.
Yeah, those are kind of the two topics of the day. It's like free will, determinism, the Doobie Brothers. It's all your important, you know,
stuff. Yeah, it hits the high points.
All the topics. So I think where we left off was we were sort of dancing towards or dancing around or having just...
All right, Dave.
We were dancing in some direction about the definition of free will.
What is free will?
That's a great question.
That is a great question. No, it's not. It's a terrible question, and I'm going to show you why. What is free will? What did you say? We discussed this a little earlier. What was the first definition that came out of your mouth?
Yeah. First thing that came out of my head was... Well, are we ignoring the part where I used, like, philosophy?
No, no, go ahead. Go with that part.
I don't remember. The first thing that came out of my head was...
The agency. Yeah,
agency.
To make meaningful...
Yeah, to make meaningful...
Decisions.
Choices, yes.
So, and the problem I pointed out there was that, of course, that's far from a layman's definition. Because no layman uses agency in that manner.
Unless they work for, like, an agency.
Unless they work for an agency. So... No one uses agency in that manner, so you've kind of already stepped outside the bounds.
I'm defining jargon with jargon.
Right.
But that's okay. I will freely cop to that.
That's okay. The other problem with it is, what is a meaningful choice versus a meaningless choice? Like, is that something that you would be, saying is user-defined? Well, or is it saying that something is a meaningful choice if... Yeah, what quality makes a choice meaningful in some absolute sense?
In this case, I would say, well, in terms of this definition, nothing really. I mean, in terms of what I would think, it's that, you know, a meaningful choice versus a meaningless choice would be, you know, like, you know, what am I doing to, you know, set out and achieve a life goal versus, you know, which of these snack foods will I eat? But here's the thing. Free will... Both of those choices are equally relevant to free will. I think the reason that I sort of instinctively went towards meaningful choice, and I think the reason that people frame it in that way, because I think people would frame it in that way, is that it raises the stakes of the discussion.
Right. It
like
makes
when
it
people
all
are talking about free will, they're not that...
Yeah,
you
but
know, there's not that much stake in which snack food I'm going
to
eat.
Unless you believe in a personal universe.
Is that what that's called?
Panettone. Unless... The universe has a person. Unless the personal universe, in other words, the universe actually gives a damn about what you do with your life. The choice to eat panettone or a pickle is the same as the choice to run for president or run for governor. I mean, the universe doesn't care what you're doing. The universe only cares whether you're making a choice.
In terms of the actual definition of free will, those are
no. That's a fine definition of free will. I think what a lot of people would say as a lay person, what is free will? They would hinge on the idea of it is being able to do what I want. And, you know, I think, first of all, I think that's actually what we would call freedom, not free will. And I think those are different things. And we can talk about that. Who cares? But what I think it means, what I think is interesting about it is immediately you've confined your free will. I don't think that most people notice it, but they've confined their free will immediately.
How so?
It is the choice to be, or the power to be able to do what I want. What I want. So your desires are already a degree of freedom, a limit on your free will. Because you don't want to do the things
free
you don't
want
to do.
Like, here's what I think, and this may be philosophical more than a... what someone would think.
Right.
But I think the crux of the difference between freedom and free will is essentially, you know, freedom is, you know, the ability to do what I want. And free will is essentially the ability to want.
Right.
And
but
want
I'm going to
a non-predetermined, you know,
exactly.
Want what I want.
And I'm going to...
it's kind of a step up from freedom, you know what I mean?
I'm going to take that a few degrees, exactly. That's a great counterpoint, and that's exactly where I want to go. Do you have the power to want what you don't want?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I'm even trying to parse that.
Right, exactly. Would an omniscient, omnipotent being have the power to want what it doesn't want? Can God make good evil and evil good? I mean, Euthyphro, let's not go there. But the point is really, can you actually overcome, you know, the desire, your desire, whatever your base desire is, at all? Can you want what you don't want in any case? And I'm not talking about a strange, like, well, I don't want to hurt this person, but I want to tell them the truth. I'm not talking about a dilemma. I'm talking about a literal desire to not have, or a desire to not desire what you desire. Can you not desire what you desire?
Like, do you mean, can you not want to want what you want?
Kind of, is that what you mean? Yes.
Or, like, to, for me, the example for that would be, you know, the, like, clinical kleptomaniac who is, you know, an ethical person.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could kind of,
also,
yeah. We don't have
just
to go,
you know,
into,
for the past 2 minutes or so, I think for the past minute of that at the end, like, just the word want happening so much.
Yeah.
Pretty much just made me start sort of in my head. I was kind of humming Cheap Trick.
Yeah. That's what you want me. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
But
that's all I was
yeah,
doing.
Well, let's leave that behind, too.
Yeah.
The thing is it's not a question I want answered. It's absurd. It's absurdism. Because the, you know, what is the, what is want? What is desire? It's a hard, it's will is essentially what it comes back to. It's the decisions we make, the, you know, ideas we have about concerns or pleasure or things like that. It's a messy area. We don't really even attempt to define it or say anything about it. And it ties directly back into free will because you only will do what you want to do, essentially. At the essential level, you will only do what you want to do. And that
is, and this is, I think, a difference between want and, say, long-term desire. Like, that's not what we're talking about. You know, you'll do plenty of things you don't
want
to
do,
but you will yourself to do them.
Right.
You know, in some sense.
Exactly. You will always do what you want to do, even if it feels like something that is uncomfortable. Even if it gives you discomfort.
I think want, to me, using want in that sentence is causing me a little discomfort. I say you will always do what you will yourself to do would be the way I would phrase
that. It's true, but that's why I'm taking it back down to that level. But no, that's why I'm taking it back down to that level. Mm-hmm. Because what I want people to understand, or you to understand as we have the conversation, is that want is so far down, buried under necessity and all these other things, that it is the essential act of your will. Or the essential driver of your will, not act. Your will chooses how to fulfill your want. And everything you do is based on a want. And right. We use the word need, or we use the word desire, we use the word want. But let's discard the sort of fluffy...
Maslow.
Fluffy everyday meanings
hierarchy
of those words. And instead go with a very, very base definition.
Right.
You want, and you act on that. That is what guides your will.
Right, that's okay. I'll go with that.
All right.
Yeah, that clarifies.
And that's where I start to see the determinism free will argument disintegrate. Because what does it matter if there's a determined universe or a free universe when we are always going to be driven by something to do something else? Do you know what I mean?
Clarify.
Okay.
I would say clarify.
Let's take it back to this base want again. You have a base want. You act based on that want.
I'd say maybe
it's always consistent
if
with
you
that
can
want.
Throw an example out because I
let's
feel
call
like
it,
we're being abstract.
Okay. Let's call it your
I feel
core
like
want.
Very
let's call it your core want. Okay. Everybody's core want is different, to a degree, and that is why some people in the same situations will act differently.
Right.
See, the core want is not always to survive.
Yeah, but I'm saying let's throw out a situation.
All right, give me a time, Dave.
Okay.
Calm down, Michael McDonald.
I'm just saying it sounded like you
getting
were just
a little excited
right back
over
into
there.
Abstraction.
You want, your core want will drive your actions. A person on a lifeboat... surrounded by sharks.
For the sake of this example, we'll call him Michael.
Michael McDonald. On a lifeboat, surrounded by sharks. Kenny Loggins in the danger zone. Kenny Loggins is in the danger zone in the sharks.
Has he already been eaten?
He's swimming amongst the sharks. The sharks seem to be bloodthirsty. They seem like they're ready to attack.
Oh, so the shark waters are the danger zone in this case.
Michael McDonald, or Kenny Loggins does know how to swim. Michael McDonald dives into the water, gets Kenny Loggins, brings him back to the lifeboat, dies in the process, gets eaten by a shark as he's hoisting Kenny into the boat.
Yes.
Okay? Obviously, Michael McDonald's base want was not pure survival. It wasn't pure passing down his DNA. We could question all day what his base want was. But he acted in a way that was detrimental to himself to fulfill that base want.
Yes.
We will always do that. We will never be able to puzzle out completely what our base wants, what our core wants are. But we will always act in accordance with them. The final decision we make will always be in accordance with these base wants. And they could possibly change over time. It's an amorphous blob at the core of you. But in the end, it will define, and possibly it can't even be defined until you die. But when you cease acting, when your actions cease, when your effects on the universe cease, your core wants will have been defined by all the actions that you did over your life. Because you could not have, you know, you did.
They're not an essentialist thing.
Right.
You're kind of going existentialist.
Right. Right.
On this kind of position of core wants.
Right. It's an existential phenomenon. It doesn't have an essence to it until it is done. But once it's done, it has an essence that cannot be denied. And no one can say, for instance, getting back to our conservative talk show where we talked about causality.
Right.
No one could say, for instance, that if Barack Obama was born in Canada instead of Hawaii or Kenya, if that's your taste. No one could say, you know, well, if a Barack Obama was born in Canada, he would have killed a bear at the age of 9.
Holy shit.
Right. It's because
that's awesome.
It's meaningless. It's meaningless.
Although, you know what I would have read the shit out of?
No, because
Dreams of Killing a Bear.
Dreams of Killing a Bear with My Father, yeah. So Barack Obama, age 9, kills a bear in another universe, but the universe doesn't have any of the qualities of our universe. That's why we don't talk about stuff like that. We talk about it when it entertains us, when it soothes our mind. We talk about it when we read Harry Turtledove novels, because we want to know if aliens helped in the Civil War, what would happen. It's a fun distraction.
Well, have you read a Harry Turtledove novel? It's not.
No. They are kind of boring. I read this one. I don't want to get into it, but yeah, I don't know.
You know, I do want to get into it because I can
All right, let's get into it. Open and close the conversation shortly.
I read a Harry Turtledove novel once. It sucked.
I read a Harry Turtledove novel once. It was a fantasy retelling of World War II. I was 100 pages in. I don't know.
Did it suck?
It sucked. The funny reason why it sucked was I couldn't tell who was supposed to be who. Like, what country is supposed to be Germany? I couldn't tell. And the names he used, the fantasy names that he made up, were so close to one another that I couldn't tell who was who. I couldn't even keep characters straight. It was terrible.
Okay, but so moral of that digression, don't read Harry Turtledove.
Don't read Harry Turtledove novels. But that's what he does, is he talks about these other universes, right? But determinism, if this universe is deterministic or not, it doesn't matter. Those things didn't happen. You can talk about the potential of changing events and what would follow, but you would never know the actual outcome. Hindsight is not 20/20. Hindsight is 0/0, or whatever the bad score is.
No, hindsight is seeing what happened.
Yeah, hindsight is seeing what happened, but having no idea what would have happened if you changed
events. What could have happened.
Right,
yeah.
I mean, it's talked about as the, you know, people talk about the butterfly effect. I don't really think the butterfly effect really does much for us, but it can show, if you just think about in your life how small coincidences change the course of your life, if you think that changing one thing in your life would have made it purely good, you're wrong. You're just wrong.
Yeah, of course.
But people think like that all the time.
Yeah, but I mean, even I think smart determinists, like, I think when you get to, you know, like a good, you know, like a materialist philosopher, like, when you get, like, a smart determinist, even then they generally acknowledge that, you know, while they think, you know, the universe is contingent and material and everything, you know, has a cause that is explicable, you know, well, in theory, you know, that you could explain.
Right.
They think that, you know, the equations, if as it were, are just
unknowable. Or at least not even nearly necessarily
unknowable, but just absurdly complicated, and we're not even close to knowing them. I mean, they keep trying to know them. I mean, that's, you know, science. That's the edges of science.
You try to know what you can, but here's the thing. Let's talk about another aspect of free will and why free will is absurd. We'll talk about determinism being absurd in a second. But
okay.
Why free will is absurd. When does free will occur?
Oh, I mean, that's a question of, you know, that gets into all sorts of philosophy of mind.
But yeah,
stuff.
But here's that's the answer. You know, here's the answer. That I'm looking for to frame, to put your brain in the, because you, that question could mean a lot of different things.
Yeah.
But when does free will occur? The answer is right now.
Oh.
It doesn't occur in the past. It doesn't occur in the future because the past is already set.
Right.
The future has yet to occur. Free will always occurs in the now.
Well, I mean, by that, then, you know, everything.
Exactly. Well, of course, everything
is happening now.
Is an essentially now experience. Yes.
Oh man, you know that phrase, essentially now experience.
Yes.
Like, I feel like I would also read that in like a bad like column in like the New York, like the Sunday Times,
it's like
the style
column,
section,
yeah,
like the horrible trends
comment.
Pieces. You know, like
it's essentially a now experience. But
you know, using Twitter, that's an essentially now experience.
Yes.
Like, you know, this kind of arm band.
We're on Twitter.
These armbands.
We're on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to think. You can go to twitter.com/
I'm trying to think.
And we're there.
It's true.
Doing things.
It's an essentially now experience.
It's an essentially now experience. So, but what I mean by that really is free will doesn't serve you to talk about the past. As we just talked about. If you think making a different choice that you would know what now would look like if you made a choice differently, you don't. You may wish you didn't do things, but it doesn't matter because you might as well embrace that you did them and try to figure out what's going to go on the next time something happens.
Right.
Because there is no free will in the past. There is no free will in the future because you don't know, well, you don't know what's going to occur.
Because it's the future. It's unknowable. It hasn't happened, et cetera,
right.
et cetera.
And that's what... something that Daniel Dennett says a lot, which I really, on this topic, I think is very important too, is he says, what is inevitable in the future? What does that even mean? It doesn't mean anything. There, you know, you can't, inevitable means unavoidable. But what does an inevitable future mean? It's the future. It's going to unfold. Does it unfold in a known way or an unknown way? What good does that do you now? It basically, unless you know the future, the fact that it might be deterministic is useful or is useless to you. The only thing that's useful are trends or predictabilities, mm-hmm. things that you know and can thus avoid, and that's the essential act of what he would call like a valuable free will, or the like free will that's worth talking about.
Right,
is,
that's sort of the crux of his compatibilist version.
Right,
of
is the
will.
Fact that we can say.
Actually, we should just for you know to edify. We should, I think, give a brief. We should step a
love
little back
DD
a second.
For a second. Huh? Just give DD some love, Daniel Dennett.
No,
some
no.
Love.
I was actually going to say
or talk about compatibilism.
No, just because I used the word, I would say we should give a brief like. Sentence a piece overview of the sort of main three views on free will.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, sure. I'll give that. So you guys know, because I just used, you know, again, a sort of jargon term of compatibilism. Basically, the three basic views, there's sort of a pure determinism where it's, you know, essentially the world is purely deterministic. There is no free will. Sorry.
Right.
There's the sort of opposite view, which is, you know, the world is not deterministic. There's free will. Hooray.
Hooray. I guess.
I don't know, that's usually, that view seems more up
it's
with,
always, a, yeah,
it
that's
seems
why,
more up with people to me.
It seems, and yeah, people seem, you know, think it's more positive, and that's a whole other curiosity.
And you know. Then compatibilism, you know, as any reasonable dualism should have, there's a third guy in the middle who's like, wait, I don't know about either of those things.
Yeah.
Where basically, most compatibilist views say that, essentially, the world is deterministic. But there is a version of free will that is carved out within that determinism, essentially.
Yeah, or I think the way Dennett says it that I like is just that we can get all that we want when we say we want free will. out of the universe that exists. Right, out of a deterministic universe. And I actually think that what Dennett is kind of saying there is that that the whole argument is a bit absurd because, you know, we can both can and do exist to a certain extent, and it fulfills the desires of people who want the universe to be deterministic alongside the people who want the universe to be, you know, for people to have free will.
Right.
So, yeah, but compatibilism kind of covers that useful idea of free will. But it's not that's the weird thing. It's not good enough for some people. Like, they want more free will, which Dennett calls sort of gratuitous free will. Like, they want gratuitous free will, which I would agree is equally useless. But why is determinism useless as a concept? That's the next thing I would like to say. Why is pure determinism useless as a concept? Because I haven't proven that free will is useless as a concept or is absurd, but I've thrown ideas out there. I've made some case, yeah. I made a decent case for that. The reason determinism is absurd as an idea or a concept is twofold. The first is that predictability would be great and is great when we have it, but a deterministic universe would look no different from a non-deterministic universe for any human experience that we have.
Yeah, I mean, essentially it's basically the difference between a deterministic and non-deterministic universe is essentially only noticeable by, well, basically God.
And here's
basically a god.
Here's the fun thing about that.
In actual sort of materialist philosophy, I think they call it a Laplace's demon, because materialist philosophers don't like talking about God because there's lots of assumptions and blah 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 that go with that. But it's the same idea. Basically, someone who was outside
the game. Someone who would have to be completely outside the system.
Who had the equation, basically, who could see the board, you know?
Who he himself, and here you go with a first mover kind of problem. He himself, this person outside of the game, who knows whether the universe is deterministic or non-deterministic.
What game's he in?
What game is he in? Yeah. Is his universe deterministic?
Essentially, now we're getting to the, basically, it's a problem you run into a lot in sort of considering
philosophical concepts.
Philosophical concepts, philosophy, that I think people who make fun of even the thought of thinking about philosophy will often hit on this and use it to make fun of people. It's what I call the stoner onion concept.
What they don't...
You know, essentially it's a thing where you're just like, you know, whoa, infinite recursion.
Yeah, there's another onion.
There's a layer.
And people think that infinite recursion is either ridiculous, impossible, or
stupid to talk about.
Or stupid to talk about. But I think every time you come up... Because not infinite... regress does not come up in every philosophical conversation or conflict.
No.
But I think when it does come up, you realize that what you're discussing is absurd. The two places it comes up are
causality.
A creator.
Yeah.
There's a creator and there's determinism. They are kind of entwined, but one doesn't necessarily have to include the other. If there's a creator of the universe or a creator to everything, then you have to... That actually, you know, it doesn't beg the question, but it
leads to
the question, who created the creator? With a deterministic universe, it leads to the first question of who would be able to detect that the universe is deterministic, and how would it be meaningful to anyone who can't detect it? And then if there is a Laplace's demon, if there is someone who can detect it,
Laplace? Is he from somewhere where it? Because
Laplace. Laplace is involved in this. I think he had like a thing where
because I know he put forth the demon stuff, but
had an idea of this calculator of a Laplacian engine or something where you would know the position of everything in the universe, in the future, and then you could determine.
I'm also just annoyed that I apparently pronounce his name in an annoying American, like, I just elongated every A in that sucker, like, Laplace. Like,
I don't know, I say Laplace's. But, yeah.
I hope you're right, honestly, because thinking about it, I like your pronunciation better.
That's how I've always heard it pronounced. I don't know. You're probably right. Maybe a primer thing.
No, I'm a goddamn disaster when it comes to pronouncing words, so you're probably right.
That's very possible. But Laplace's demon is the same thing as the engine or the calculator. It is the being or...
Who's watching the engine.
Who knows where everything is. Like, right. He knows where everything is. The other idea would be a machine that would know where everything is, so a person could know it, or a person could conceivably use it. Mm-hmm. I don't think Laplace actually put that idea forward. I think that's people kind of spinning off of the demon. But if you have a Laplace's demon, how does he know that he's not in a deterministic universe, or is? What would he... You know, what would the demon's world be like? It's just absurd. And I think when you hit on that, you realize what we're talking about maybe isn't... It's not that it isn't worth talking about. Maybe it is the problem that Wittgenstein brought forth, that some philosophy might just be syntactical or semantic...
Yeah, puzzles.
Word puzzles, right. Because I don't have a problem with infinite regress of matter at all. It just doesn't bother me. You know.
It bothers me a lot. And I wake up sometimes just like, infinite regress of matter!
Yeah. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me that time kind of doesn't make sense when we go back to the Big Bang. It doesn't bother me. Mm-hmm. Doesn't bother me that think about what was before it. Because, I don't know. Just somehow for me, it's like, if you know what zero point energy is, and if you don't, you know, go read about it. Once you know what zero point energy is, that stuff doesn't bother you anymore. Also, zero point energy bothers you.
Also, there's a certain attitude there. Actually, going back in philosophy while we're talking about, you know, both famous compatibilist philosophers of free will and, you know, just philosophers of skepticism. I think there's a great quote from David Hume. I'm going to misquote it slightly.
That's all right.
But
go for
it. I'll paraphrase it, basically. When someone asked him basically about, like, because apparently David Hume was like, world's nicest guy. Everyone loved it. Like, he was just like...
Where's our David Hume?
He was just a good, like, big, friendly guy and, like, pleasant to be around to his friends.
I hope people say that about me. Mm-hmm. They're not gonna.
But anyhow, so people's sort of, like, in terms of saying how he reconciled that with, you know, basically his philosophy of, you know, just, like, skepticism and, you know, against religion and, you know, just, you know, basically attacking viciously, you know, the concepts of causality that make the world make sense.
Yeah.
And so it was, you know, how do you do that and then, you know, live, you know, as this pleasant person you are? And he pretty much just said, you know, well, you know, I do that, you know, yeah, I do this philosophy, you know, I think about it, logically, and I write, you know. Then, you know, I go, you know, I make merry with my friends, I have a drink, I eat.
Well,
and like, I think that's a healthy way to look at it. That's
I try
a
not
to
give any credit to YouTube users,
which is reasonable.
But some guy out there has a video, and I don't know why he's obsessing on this one thing, but he is. Because Richard Dawkins will say that he does believe it, that things are deterministic. Things like a criminal is just, you know, some criminals have sort of an unavoidable sequence of events that is going to lead them to do crimes.
Right.
And, you know, should we punish these people? You know, why do we treat, if the insane are subject to their brain chemistry and so are we, this isn't a Dawkins thing, it's just going off on another topic, similar topic, right? If the insane have, depend on their brain chemistry and so do we, why do we not really hold them responsible for their actions, but a criminal who otherwise looks normal, we hold them responsible.
Yeah, that
for
is one
actions.
Of the reasons that I think the free will sort of argument, while it may be absurd, is still something that has to be engaged, just because it has real repercussions
implications,
for,
yeah,
you know,
in the world.
Criminal justice.
But Richard Dawkins just kind of lives his life not really thinking about that. You know, he admits that it may be not consistent, but he kind of doesn't like the idea of living. You know, that thinking that maybe criminals don't deserve to go to jail, et cetera, et cetera. But I found that ridiculous. And this ties back into the free will determinism argument. Since we really don't know determinism versus free will, we can't say that a person has an inevitable fate, that they're going to, well, he couldn't help it. He was going to be abused, and then he's going to be whatever, and then he's going to commit crimes. That doesn't really enter into, to me, the morality of what you end up doing with them. If I program, and this is a bad example, but it's an example where I'm going to start making this argument. Hopefully I'll refine this example, and someday it'll be a really good argument.
But right now it's a little shaky.
It's shitty. If you made two robots, just imagine, all right, shitty, made two robots. One walks around and tells everybody, have a nice day.
Okay, so pleasant robot.
And one...
What's his name?
Bobby.
No, give like
all right,
Pleasantron.
Fine. Plinko.
Pleasantron.
Plinko.
Okay, Plinko. Plinko's
I like
nice.
Plinko.
I like
Plinko. It's a fun game.
Okay.
It's a fun robot.
Okay, so Plinko, pleasant robot, then tells everyone to have a nice day.
There's Planko. And he hits people with a board. You program these two robots. They cannot do anything but what they do. It's not their fault. You've programmed them. It really, you should blame the guy who wrote Planko's program.
Right.
But just as a question, which of these robots would you rather have confined to a space, like to a jail, and which of them would you let walk around in the world? Regardless of
I have a quick question.
Yeah,
actually.
Go ahead.
Planko.
Yeah.
Before he hits someone with a board.
Yes.
Is there a speaker that plays the Price is Right, You've Failed a Pricing Game music?
Yes. Planko is, and Planko's mean. I mean, he has like bad, like horrible insults programmed into him. I mean, he's just not pleasant in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
But it's not his fault. You know, it is his programming. So, but still, you would lock Planko up and you would let Planko run around. It does, and you would consider that
Planko
fine.
Planko smells like rosemary.
And the thing is that's morally fine. There's no problem with that. The need that should be fulfilled in all cases.
Planko has a puppy cannon.
And what? That's not good.
No, it's like low velocity. They're stored in like little,
like soft little
cute little dog houses.
Okay,
like,
that softly.
No, trust me, it's good.
There's a parachute maybe to make sure they fall softly.
No,
to the
it's
ground.
Not so much like a violent cannon. So much as it's more like a puppy dispenser. Is
puppy
probably
dispenser. That's probably
that's
a better
probably
name
a
for it.
Less threatening way to put
the
it.
The thing about Plinko and Planko is you would lock Planko up. You would let Plinko be free to say nice things to people. There's no moral problem with that act, in my estimation. Sure, it is neither of them.
Yes, but then there's the problem. I mean, where this gets tricky to, you know, sort of apply is Plinko and Planko being robots, and this not being, you know, an Isaac Asimov tale.
Right.
They have no rights.
Well, that's the thing.
I mean, I could take a crap on Planko if I want, you know? No problem. There's nothing morally wrong with that.
But, yeah.
You know, he hits me with a board.
Dave, you're leading us down a bad road here.
He hits me with a board, you know, I can
you're leading us down the road of then
anything I want to
can
him.
We just make it, that's to say they're intelligent, but they can't help their programming.
Okay, yeah, now.
Just like a person.
Now you've moved it where I would feel uncomfortable pooping on one.
Right. They're intelligent. They're aware, self-aware.
And now the example has taken the next step.
Okay. And they're self-aware, which, you know, is the only reason you would feel bad about locking up Planko anyways, and not just disassembling him. But you do lock up Planko. The thing about it is there's no problem with locking up Planko and having empathy for Planko's position and attempting to maybe free Planko of his programming. But there's no problem with locking him up. The problem with it's the problem of punishment, really, and that
yeah,
is
yeah. What is the point?
Yeah,
who
what
does
is
it
the
serve?
Point? Who does it serve? And it's far better. And I mean, this is just a belief I have, regardless of Planko robots beating people with boards. That the true way to solve those problems is empathy. We shouldn't punish these people and feel good about the state having vengeance or whatever else. It should not be an act of vengeance. That's futile. Again, because the past has already happened and it is essentially a now experience.
Yeah.
It should be about empathy and rehabilitation, which I don't really think prisons have gotten anywhere near that.
No, if prisons were about empathy and rehabilitation, there would probably, people would probably be more annoyed at all the rape.
They would be. The thing about it is, you know, yeah, this isn't a discussion about prisons and punishment, but it I think you would still lock up the intelligent robot who is programmed to hurt people. I don't think you should have a problem with that. It's just the way we have to construct a society so that the society does not destroy itself. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's only sensible. You don't have to really even appeal to a person's heart or their soul when you're talking about this stuff. There's no, I don't appeal to your heart when you give me a parking ticket. So we have to do it to make society work better.
I would go that far.
Yeah.
That's mostly just because, man, I moved to Edgewood recently, and those cops are they are real parking ticket oriented.
Yeah.
That borough.
That's they don't really have a lot of other things to do with their time, so they are very parking ticket oriented. I mean, how long did it take them to catch that guy who was spying on women in your building? Actually, it was a lay person who discovered that, right?
Yeah. Although,
they were too busy giving people parking tickets.
Yeah, that's true.
They would have known if they weren't giving all those parking tickets out. Yeah. So, essentially, determinism is equally absurd because it wouldn't change anything. If, let's say, Laplace's demon appears to us and somehow he can prove to us that it's a completely deterministic universe.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't reveal to us what's going to happen. Doesn't change a thing. Doesn't change anything.
No, I mean, it changes, I guess, how you conceive of things.
Yeah, but is it going to change how you act? No, because you still know that your actions have due consequences.
Mm-hmm.
The only way a deterministic universe even makes any sense or is useful to talk about is in a world that is both deterministic but also unpredictable. So you have no idea what the due consequences of your actions are going to be.
Yeah, that would be, I would say, is probably an apt description of the world in which we live.
I don't think so.
Deterministic but unpredictable? Or at least unpredictable by us, because we don't know.
No,
Are you not a believer in a deterministic world?
No, I think it's essentially absurd. I think it's an absurd claim. I don't think it is a deterministic world because I don't think the word determinism says anything. It's like saying it's a blue universe, that you're not telling me anything. It just actually really, it's more useful to tell me it's a blue universe because then I know what sort of light it's absorbing and reflecting. It's like you telling me that it's a Gerflungen universe. It doesn't mean anything to me. It's not giving me any valuable information. So it's not that I believe it or disbelieve it. I just think it's a worthless term. You're wasting my time, essentially. And I've wasted a whole episode of time talking about how I think it's a waste of time.
Here's, I think, the one place where you and I differ on that. Okay. Is that you seem to be placing the sole value of, you know, knowing whether the universe is deterministic or not, essentially, in its utility.
Yeah. There's no utility.
Whereas, that's true, but I think there's a certain amount of inherent, like, you know, the kind of people who are dicking around about whether it's a deterministic universe or not are the kind of people for whom just that simple knowledge is an inherent good. Like, because it's interesting.
I would ask why. I mean, aside from a psychological pleasure they might receive, which is fine. Okay, go and talk about your deterministic universe, but I don't think it should be. I can't really justify saying if it brings you pleasure to talk about such things, but don't put them in philosophy because I think they're useless. Fine, if it gives you pleasure, whatever. I don't care. Put them in philosophy. I'm not going to really spend a lot of time dwelling on it because I think it's essentially absurd. And knowing one way or the other would not do me any good. I believe in physics. I believe in cause and effect. I don't believe that there are many truly random things.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe there are things that are essentially random. The position of an electron kind of things where we have a guess, we have statistics, we don't really know.
But that's basically the information we have now.
Yeah, like, I think if I had to come down on this, gun to my head, I'm saying it's a statistical universe.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not deterministic in any, I don't think, because I think a deterministic universe would be a statistical one. You know, like, it's a 100%. One out of one.
Honestly, I don't know if I'm comfortable with the feeling of a statistical universe, because I know statisticians.
Yeah, they're complicated. Actually, I heard a weird thing this week. It's not worth talking about. I'll tell you about it later. Okay. Leave all those people, listeners, hanging.
Okay. All right.
So have I made my case that both determinism and free will are absurd to me? And justifiably so.
Yeah, I think you've presented a pretty solid argument for that. You know?
Yeah.
I think we've thought, we've learned.
Right. I think it's worth talking about. Obviously, I believe in a statistical universe, and that is why I believe so strongly in science. Because I think science makes things predictable. But a deterministic universe, it's possibly a predictable universe in almost every way.
Mm-hmm.
It may even be a possibly one-in-one predictable universe. It may actually be true that we can predict every event if we have enough knowledge. But we'll never have that knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, basically knowing that in any certain sense is,
The information...
It's religious at a certain point.
Yeah, exactly. Determinism, the information... Yeah. Information has been lost. And there's no way to recover it.
Oh.
And because that information has been lost, I think even knowing certain things about, like, even knowing the position and momentum or what have you of every particle in the universe is not going to tell you the deterministic whole of what's going to happen. It doesn't matter, really. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if I'm right or wrong. It doesn't matter if anyone's right or wrong. It doesn't matter if it's a statistical universe where overall it's more of a 90 out of 100 certainty that certain things are going to happen, or a 1 out of 100 that certain things are going to happen. It doesn't matter. It's completely useless information. That's why I find the discussion of a god way more useful, because the properties that people give to a god, even though I don't believe in them, the properties they give to the god would have much more of an effect on my life than a deterministic universe.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're like, well, God's going to send you to hell. Hey, you know what that's more interesting than? A deterministic universe. That tells me something about you. It tells me something about your God. And we can talk about that now. But if you just came up to me and said, hey, the universe is 100% deterministic. Okay, that's end of discussion. Like, you believe, it is religious. It's a belief based on nothing. And that's why I would have to say it's absurd. Both positions are absurd. But I do agree with Dennett that we have everything. Human experience includes everything that we would want out of free will. With some confusing possible exceptions. I don't want to say exceptions, but some sticky wickets, as it were.
Wickets, right. The wickets are...
You know, people who are deluded.
What makes a wicket sticky? And why is that a problem? I've never played
croquet. Then the ball wouldn't go through? I don't know. I've played croquet. That doesn't mean I understand that term.
Like, if you have...
Aren't there wickets in whatchamacallit, that fake baseball game that they play?
Cricket?
Yeah.
Are there wickets in cricket? I don't know.
That would be weird because that rhymes. Maybe I'm just kind of thinking of something else.
That'd be like if football had butt balls. Like, that's dumb. That sounds stupid to me.
Well, I don't know. But actually, I'm Googling it. I think that there is a wicket in cricket.
Oh, I think that's the thing they throw the ball at.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a wicket in cricket.
With the...
So there should be a Newt Mall in football. That doesn't really work.
Anyways, unless you're speaking Spanish.
So we have all the experiences that we would want out of free will. But there are possible exceptions. I think, here's the thing. I was going to say, you know, you would say, okay, well, what about a person who's deluded? The truth is that we all are deluded by the nature of our psychology. We just, you know, our brain fills in details. So we remember things, but they didn't really happen the way we remember them. We see things, but they aren't really what we're seeing anyway. I'm deluded constantly by the fact that it looks to me like everything around me is a solid object. That is a delusion. None of this stuff is solid. It's all 99% empty space.
Chunks of matter. Just
tiny little atoms, chunks of matter. Right. Electrons. Light is deluding me as we speak because everything, because of how it reflects light, looks like a solid object.
All right.
So, I mean, does that limit our free will? Does that mean we're living a deluded life that, you know, is purposeless and sad? No. We get everything we want out of free will. We get to feel like we make choices. We get to, like, that's the wonderful thing about self-awareness. We have this, you know, we have self-awareness, and that gives us everything that we want, would want to feel out of free will. And that's human experience. It may not be philosophical, but it is what matters when we say free will. That's psychology.
Okay.
Done. And welcome back to I'm Trying to Think, episode 8. I'm your host and executive producer, Chuck Werner. And with me, as always, is my co-host and
associate producer.
He gets points on the back end. Dave Stern. Back end! All right.
Oh, man.
So, Dave, free will determinism, how does that all relate to me singing Michael McDonald earlier?
That's a great question.
Because the lyric, what a fool believes he sees, a wise man has no power to reason away. If we perceive that we have free will, no one can tell you that you don't. You feel like you make choices. That the whatever construct in the brain is making those things happen. You can't, that cannot be reasoned away from you. No one could take that away from you, Dave. Mm-hmm. You'll always, you know, live in that sort of mind state.
Right.
The perception of free will, no matter what we know about the universe, I don't think it will ever go away. I don't think that even if you knew everything was going to happen, you would still be surprised. Maybe after a couple hours you wouldn't be. But you'd be like, oh, he's going to say this. Bam. You know.
Wow, he said that.
Because that's just the life we, that's the way the human mind was constructed. The same way that we see solid objects, even though there aren't really solid objects, we see them because it's useful, because that means that we, if we saw objects as 99% empty space, we wouldn't know when we were going to fall off of things, for instance.
Right.
We would have a hard time sitting down in chairs.
We wouldn't be able to duck fucking Planko's board.
Planko would hit us every time. he's very accurate anyways. He was manufactured to be very good with a board. So, Planko.
Yeah, but, spatial rapid recognition stuff can be tricky. Like, you could dodge Planko every now and then.
I don't know, Dave. I saw a robot playing table hockey, you know? He was pretty good.
Ooh.
Pretty good.
Where is our table hockey Kasparov?
Exactly. So,
also, when you say table hockey, you mean like the air?
Air hockey, okay, yeah. Table hockey, whatever.
Because there's that knock hockey one, you know, where it's like on a wooden table.
What? That's crazy talk.
No, it's a real thing.
All right, I believe you, but
I think you use a very small hockey stick.
So,
which that part might be made up.
I think you made that part up. But yeah, it doesn't matter what we believe or what we know. We'll probably always perceive ourselves as having free will, and we will never actually be able to know that we don't. Just it's beyond our reckoning. which it's a very interesting side argument, the naturalism versus skepticism thing. But we could get into that another week.
We do not have the time.
To talk about how that goes. But if those of you out there want to prepare for that, just think, is it reasonable or rational to be skeptical of a tautology? There you go.
Yep. Maybe tell us what you think about that.
Tell us what you think about that.
Perhaps.
Because we'd be interested in what you have to say.
Perhaps by emailing us at...
Contact@imtryingtothink.com. Contact@imtryingtothink.com.
Yeah, don't email us at contract@imtryingtothink.com unless you got an offer.
Yeah.
We're willing to listen.
Unless you need somebody.
We're willing to listen. To
disappear. Yeah. But
jeez, this... Wait. Oh, jeez. I meant
killing people. I meant killing people.
God damn.
Yeah. I'm dark. Very dark over on this side of the table.
Yeah, over here, it's just like, we just want a TV show on this side of the table.
That's because you're closer to the overhead lighting in the room.
Yeah.
Over here, it's shadowy.
We're entertainers. Like, you're murderers. See, it's like...
I can't see 2 feet in front of my face.
This is like, I'm not
actually
sure because I haven't seen the movie yet and it's in my Netflix queue, but this is like what I imagine the Martin Scorsese film King of Comedy is like. Entertainment, but murder, and it's dark and it's weird. I don't know.
I have no clue. But this has been a great episode of really me wonking on about stuff.
Wonking around.
For a long time. I was thinking we could do 4 hours of this. I only scratched the surface of some of these arguments.
It's true.
And,
I like wonking because it's a good it's a good combination. It's a verb that combines, you know, the noun wonk, like a policy wonk, with a British euphemism for masturbation. That's perfect.
It works
like
out. The point is that
we
could do a 4-hour side episode, bonus episode, for paying members of the I'm Trying to Think community.
Oh, man.
First, we have to figure out a way.
If someone wants to give us money, we'll do it in their
to
house.
Get paying members. Yeah, I was thinking of we could have a I'm Trying to Think dinner contest where you win if you're willing to buy us dinner. And the prize is
dinner.
You buy us dinner. Mm-hmm. And you get to hang out with us for dinner.
So this is one of those things where you say contest, but what you mean is begging.
I'm not begging, Dave. That is beneath me. But I am saying, if you're willing to provide free food, we'll probably show up.
Okay, that's fair.
That's pretty fair.
Okay, if it's not... Yeah, you phrased it like that. That doesn't seem like begging, so I will stop putting marker on this cardboard.
Yeah. Yeah. That sound wasn't going to work anyways. Nobody's going to give you food for that. Trust me. I've tried. Oh. Anyways... This has been episode 8. Dave, do you want to leave on a recommendation? Do you want to leave on a dance number? Singing Michael McDonald? How do you want to end this episode here?
I kind of want to leave on a dance number, but that plays real shitty in audio, so...
Yeah, we should do video podcasts of the dance numbers.
Yeah, so
that'll be later on in our careers.
I'll just say let's end it on one... Actually, yeah, I'll probably put a link in the show notes, maybe, but if you're actually interested in the... kind of discussions we were having about free will. One thing I would recommend reading is the book Freedom Evolves by Daniel Dennett, who came up briefly.
Yeah, we talked about him a little. He actually can be found all over the interwebs, on the YouTubes.
If you're more
He has a lot of TED Talks, or like, well, 3, which is a lot.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot.
There's the TED website, which
if you're a visual audio learner, you can listen to some of his lectures. If you're a... I like reading books, learner. You can pick up Freedom Evolves, which I would recommend.
Is there an audiobook of that? Because I would totally read an audiobook of that.
Probably. I don't know.
Yeah, it's odd that I haven't read it, but I just...
You know, I'd check and maybe talk about it if we were like one of the 80 bajillion podcasts I listen to that are sponsored by Audible.com. But you know what? We're not, so fuck audiobooks.
Yeah. Hey, Audible.com, how about some sponsorship? What's going on?
Yeah, sponsor us or I'll continue shitting on audiobooks, which I don't particularly care for.
Yeah, so up yours. We don't have any sponsors, Dave, except the wonderful people at the Foundation Institute. Foundation-institute.org, who have been providing us with endless support, mostly in the form of attaboys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But those really buck me up.
They do keep us going.
Mm-hmm. The Foundation Institute. Planning for the future and tomorrow.
Yeah, they're good people. So thank you again for tuning in to episode 8. I'm going to leave on a recommendation. Go listen to some Michael McDonald songs. Try and discern what he's saying. He's got his own solo work. He's done some work with the Doobie Brothers. You can listen to those. I mean, whatever you like.
Steely Dan. I don't think he ever sang with them.
No, he...
But he did. He played keyboards for them.
He played keyboards. There might be something hidden in the keyboards. On the Steely Dan stuff he did. You don't know. He's a little bit creepy. You never know.
Ricky, don't lose a number.
We'll be back.
You don't want to call
I don't want to listen to him singing that song. We'll be back next week with episode 9. I don't really have an anticipation of what we're going to talk about, but I guess the free will determinism thing has been pretty much settled. We might talk about Socrates. I mean, he's a good topic. I guess I like that as an idea. I don't know. I mean, it's really just talking about Plato writing about Socrates. But there's still some value. I mean, I believe in a historical Socrates. I just really, you have to frame him in the idea, knowing that Plato wrote the the stuff, and he was kind of, you know, a little bit of hero worship.
Absolutely. I think that's going to be a great discussion. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, good. And until next week,
that's us.
Keep that's rolling that. And hanging out with stuff and doing your thing. Ricky, don't lose that number. You don't want to call nobody else. Send it off in a letter to yourself. Ricky, don't lose that number.
I am Michael, you are a podcast bitch. Yeah, I just hit you. What are you going to do about it, huh? Motherfucker.